Yeah. Well, on the fan line from the Argus Leader, covers the Sioux Falls Storm, the Canaries, and also a big Twins guy, Matt Zimmer. Matt, I was on vacation for a week, but I came back, and no surprise, I saw that the Storm dominated Cedar Rapids last week. Was that game as lopsided as at least what I was reading?
Yeah, they were really good. I mean, obviously, we're kind of used to that. They're the best team in the league, but they were good even for them. You know, I talked to several players afterwards, talked to Curtis Riggs, and even talked to a couple guys from the Cedar Rapids side, and there was just sort of a general consensus that that's about as good as they can play. And with the talent that they have and the coaching staff that they have, if they're that good, if they're at their best, nobody's going to beat them. Mm-hmm. You know, I even got the sense that Cedar Rapids was, I mean, they were disappointed because they did not play their best game, but you could tell there was a little bit of a sense of, well, we're not going to beat them when they're that good.
What was more impressive, was it the offense? Because they looked efficient, but then I see what the defense did with the 5 sacks, 11 tackles for loss, a fumble, an interception. I mean, what stood out to you when you were watching that game?
Definitely the defense, because not just were they getting the ball back, keeping Cedar Rapids out of the end zone, but I think at one point they forced either a turnover or essentially a punt. Obviously, there's no punting in that league, but what I mean by that is forced them to kick a field goal out of their own end zone, which wasn't really, you know, trying to actually make the field goal, but just get rid of the ball. So I think in 5 straight series, Cedar Rapids either turned it over or kicked it out of their own goal line, basically. And that's, you know, you just don't see that very often in indoor football, especially against an offense that's pretty good. And that stretch allowed them to go from 7-7 to 42-7, and the game was over at that point. You know, they took their foot off the gas a little bit in the third quarter, let Cedar Rapids get back-to-back touchdowns. But even then, they were still 20 points down, and then the offense kind of picked it up from there. So it was a total team effort like it often is, but the defense definitely was more dominant, more impressive, I thought.
What did Cedar Rapids look like? What did the players look like, their reactions? I mean, were they all chirpy and barking and talking big like they did last week, supposedly, or did they look pretty much like they knew they had been beaten?
There was a little bit of that early, especially because, you know, it was 7-7. And I think, you know, both teams actually allowed themselves to get into that a little bit. And after the game, Curtis kind of scolded these guys for engaging them in that sort of thing. But, you know, like I said, it fell apart on them pretty quick. Mm-hmm. So any kind of trying to use that as whether it's a psychological thing or just trash talking or whatever, I mean, they had to quiet down pretty quick because once it got to 42-7 in the first half, everyone kind of knew the game was over at that point.
Well, I got to imagine, you get to that point, you're down 42-7 at halftime, and you still got to come out and at least try and play that second half, knowing that game is all but over. And I mean, how was the crowd? Were they dead when they knew it was over, or were they just hoping for the Storm to keep their foot on the gas?
I think maybe they were great in the first half. And then when Cedar Rapids got a couple touchdowns early in the second half, that might have almost been good, at least from the crowd's standpoint, because it kind of gave them an excuse to hang around. And they got back into it a little bit. And the Storm, right after the touchdown that cut it to 20, they had a one-play touchdown right after that, you know, just like a 40-yard run by Torrey Harrison, which, again, just sort of slammed the door on any thoughts of a comeback. And at that point, it wasn't the most exciting second half. The fourth quarter kind of rolled to a stop there at the end, but when a 40-point lead, that happens sometimes.
I was reading your article in the Argus this morning, and this just kind of came to me. With all the Storm football that you've seen in this run that they've been on over the last decade, if you could describe the Storm in one word, what would it be?
Well, dynasty. I mean, because obviously this has been going for a decade now, and it has all the hallmarks of a dynasty, meaning not just the fact that they've won every year or that they've got this 10-year streak, well, it would be a 10-year streak if it hadn't been for the sanctions a few years ago. But just, you know, the consistency and the lack of turnover that they've had in that entire franchise. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been very little, you know, upsetting of the apple cart, so to speak. We've only had two owners, which were essentially, you know, attached at the hip to some level. Basically one coach for the entirety of this dynasty. And I think, not to give Curtis too much credit, but I mean, he's the reason that they've continued doing this, because a lot of the other coaches in this league, you know, their indoor coaching job isn't even their primary job. It's like a side gig for them or something. And Curtis isn't just a good coach, but he's a very dedicated and committed coach, and this means a lot to him. And, you know, that's what it's going to take for some other team in this league to rise to the Storm's level, is a commitment from top to bottom, ownership, front office, coach, and players, to get something going where you have continuity, you have the same players coming back, you have the same coaches, the same schemes. And that takes a long time to build, and a lot of these teams just won't commit to it. They're not into it enough, and the Storm are, and it just kind of perpetuates itself. And when you see guys like James Terry and Corey Johnson and Terrence Bryant and Chris Dixon and so many of these guys that have been with this team for, you know, not just a few years, but in JT and Corey Johnson's case, it's like 8-9 years.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's amazing, and that's a big, big reason why this thing has continued the way that it has.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that once you get past, you know, you do this for a few years and people really start taking notice, and the players do too. You know, you'll see some guy out on the West Coast and he's finally ready to play some indoor football. You know, he's waiting on the CFL or NFL for that matter, whatever. Uh-huh. But they want to come here. You know, if they want to take a shot and get some video and play some games and get some action, these good players want to come here now. And we're almost getting to the point, Zimmer, that I think almost like we're spoiled to the point beyond belief. And what's going to happen, heaven forbid, when we lose two home games in a row down the road here, you know?
Well, you're definitely right. And that's almost gotten to the point now where, I mean, that was sort of what led to this whole ascension to a dynasty, was once it became apparent that Sioux Falls had all these resources and had all these advantages. Like you said, players from all over the country that were looking for a place to play started sort of circling Sioux Falls as the place to play. But now it almost works. I don't want to say it works against them, but now they're turning guys away. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have guys coming in that have, you know, played in the Big Ten or the SEC or Division II All-Americans or something, and they're looking for a place to play. And the Storm are saying, hey, I'm sure you are a great player, but we've got this guy here who's been doing it for 6-7 years, and he lives in this community, and he's committed to us, and we're committed to them.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
we're going to stick with that guy. So, you know, part of it is, yeah, they attract talent from all over, but another part of it, too, is they've been loyal to the guys that have, you know, earned their spot here, too.
And I got to imagine that means a lot when you're talking about an industry. I mean, frankly, in, you know, minor league sports, independent sports, there's not a whole lot of stability in that, no matter what the sport is. If guys at least have something that they can count on, I mean, that's got to make a world of difference.
Yeah, I mean, you talk a lot about how in minor league sports, or any of the sports around here, really at any level, we like to see local guys peppering the rosters. We like it when the colleges recruit local kids to play there. We like it when the minor league teams give local guys a shot, like what the Canaries are doing right now with Sam Lind and Kai Winter. With the Storm, though, what's interesting is that they bring in local guys. I mean, we've seen, you know, Corey Johnson from Aberdeen. We've seen Dusty Hivorka and Adam Hicks and all sorts of guys that, you know, grew up here and played football and went on to play for the Storm. But a lot of these other guys become local guys. You know, Terrence Bryant's from California. I don't know exactly where James Terry's from. Mm-hmm. But those guys, they weren't local guys when they got here, but they are now. You know, they've been here for almost 10 years.
Yeah.
They've lived here and made this town their home. So yeah. I think they're just as much of a local guy, quote-unquote, to the fans and to people that support the Storm as someone who's born in Sioux Falls. And that's another thing that goes a long way towards both the success they have and the relationship they have with their fans.
He's Matt Zimmer from the Argus Leader, covers the Sioux Falls Storm and the Canaries. Here on Sports Talk with Craig and Chris, the Rev sitting in for Craig Maddock. Craig out this week. He'll be back on Monday. Let's switch to the Canaries quickly here, Matt. After that 10-game losing streak where, I mean, they played themselves 10.5 games out of first, I mean, it seems like they've stabilized things a little bit. They had that hard luck loss against Sioux City, that walk-off that they could have won their fourth consecutive series, beat Gary in the series opener last night, but things, they seem like they settled down for the Birds.
Yeah, I think that's the way I would put it, too. They sort of stabilized it, stopped the bleeding, so to speak, that they had. And you're right, too. I mean, not only did they have that 10-game losing streak, but there have been at least two games so far this year where I think you can make a pretty good case that the umpire cost them a win.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just a couple bounces the other direction. They're a .500 team right now. But, you know, every team can probably say that on some level. They'll always point to this mistake or this bad call or this whatever. They're 14-22. That's obviously not a great record. But like you said, they've kind of stabilized things. And I think, you know, when they were on that 10-game losing streak, I think they were on the verge of really having a complete collapse. And I think there is even a little worry about whether Steve Shirley was even going to make it through the season. And it really got to sort of a panic situation there. And that has subsided. I think the players have moved past that. And the thing I've continued to say is that as long as they keep pitching as well as they have, they're going to have a chance. Because their starting pitching has really been pretty consistent all season long. Probably as consistent as they've had since their championship season. They're getting a pretty good outing every time they send somebody out on the mound. But, you know, you kind of keep saying, okay, as long as the starting pitching keeps going, the bats will come around, they'll start winning games. Well, the bats haven't really come around yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every single night they're either winning 3-2 or losing 3-2.
I looked at the lineup, I think, a couple days ago when I got back, and I saw that there was only got one guy hitting over 300. I think that's, Shelby Ford.
Shelby
and
Ford.
I look at the rest of the averages, and I'm like, 232, 216, 258. And I mean, that's your top of the lineup right there.
Yeah, I think the big problem is they don't have anyone in their lineup who's terrible. They just have too many guys who are average and not enough guys who are great. You know, so Shelby Ford's been outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think he's even been better than his numbers would indicate. He has four great at-bats every time out there, can play second base, shortstop, or catcher. I mean, he's really been a valuable player for them. And Chris Duffy's been pretty productive. Kevin Gulp, I think, has done a pretty decent job holding down the catcher spot and the nine hole, considering, I think, going into the season, he was supposed to be the backup catcher. But overall, like I said, you've just got too many guys that are hitting 240. You know, that's not terrible, especially if you're getting it done defensively. But that makes it tough. It puts pressure on those pitchers and pressure on the guys who are getting it done when you're just not getting enough contributions up and down the lineup. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is. It's hard to go out and ideally you'd like to find a big basher out there or something. They're probably not going to be able to do that unless, you know, Jason Kuhl decides he wants to play for the Canaries or something, which I did suggest to them, by the way.
Did you? Good, good.
Yeah.
Get the Kuhl over
But here. Otherwise, you just got to ask some of those guys that are, like I said, hitting 230, 240. You got to say, hey, you got to pick it up a little bit or we're going to have to go out and try and give someone else a chance because we're just not scoring enough runs.
Well, Matt, appreciate the time. Nice to talk to you after my my week off. And what are you working on? I'm assuming it's probably a lot of the United Bowl and sprinkle in a little bit of Canaries.
Pretty much all Storm this week. I'm doing a feature story on this is going to be the last game they ever play in the arena. So kind of actually
an
emotional thing and a little bit historic too. And looking back at how good that building has been to them, and you know maybe looking forward a little bit to what the future holds.
Sounds good, Matt. Hey, we'll see you out there at the presser on Friday.
I'll be there. Thanks, guys.
All right. See you, Matt. Matt Zimmer from the Argus Leader.